Welcome back to another episode of the Disaster Podcast. This is episode 2. I'm Jamie Davis, the pod medic, and I'm here with you on this brand new show. Maybe you caught our first episode last week, and we're excited to be able to bring these things to you. This is a show about disaster response and educating you about what it means to be that first responder in those types of situations, man-made and otherwise. And as always, my co-host in crime, as it were, in this episode is Sam Bradley. Sam, how are you?
Well, we're not going to talk about crime, Jamie. That's a whole different podcast. But I'm excited to be here again, and I'm excited about the fact that we were able to corral our partners, Dr. Joe Holly and paramedic Jim Logan, to be with us for another podcast, because they're not always that easy to get a hold of. So we're going to say hi to them and then talk a little bit about what we're going to do with this podcast. Joe?
Well, thanks, Sam. It's great to be back with you guys again. And we are indeed very excited about disaster medicine in general, and certainly about talking about it and its many, many, many facets and issues and topics that we can discuss.
Jim, hi there.
Hey, good evening, good morning, wherever you are. And we're proud to be part of this thing we call the Disaster Podcast. And I think there's a lot of lessons that we'll be able to help the listener with from lessons learned from different disasters. We don't know everything, but we do know some things.
And you know, that's a great lead-in, Jim, to what we're going to be talking about today on this episode. And that is, this is our second episode, and we thought we'd kind of cover some of our thoughts on what we hope to cover in the coming weeks and months here on the show, as well as far as topics go. But hopefully that will lead you to think about what kind of topics you and the audience are thinking about for this type of a show, and it'll encourage you to get back out and reach out to us and let us know what your thoughts are about what you'd like to hear in a future episode so that we can bring that to you. So I think without too much further ado, let's jump right on in and talk about this. You know, last week we talked about the different sizes and types of disasters, and so we're going to be obviously covering that. But Sam, there's all sorts of things we can be leaping into here.
Oh, God. You know, this has been going through my mind since we started talking about this. And we could do this podcast for years and never repeat the same thing twice. Right off the top of my head, and I know this is one of the things that's special to Dr. Joe, is talking about how medicine differs in the austere environment. We want to talk about, you know, Jim made a comment last week about it all starts as a local disaster. Well, then where does it go when that disaster overwhelms local resources? It goes regional, it goes state, it goes federal. And I don't know how folks, if they really understand the different configurations of teams at all those different levels. So we'd like to talk about that. Have the opportunity. God, there's so many wonderful. I want people to know the disaster workers and who they are and why they do what they do, and having some interviews with those folks. Jim talks a lot about the management of disaster and adhering to ICS systems and that kind of thing. So I'd certainly like to jump back in that some more. Jamie, last week you mentioned preparedness. We were talking about Atlanta and the fact that, you know, they might have an ice storm in a part of the country that's not used to ice storms. So the kind of things that your part of the country in Maryland would, you know, do ahead of time for something like that, they wouldn't be expecting it in Atlanta. Jim, what do you think? What are your thoughts?
Gosh, it just, you know, like you said, Sam, since we've been talking about putting this podcast together, there's a million things that have gone through my mind. I attended a public health forum on mental health and disasters. And not only for the victims of a disaster, but also the mental health of the first responders, starting with local, then going regional, state, and federal. You know, there's things out there that we probably need to cover, like psychological first aid, you know, preparing local responders how to deal with those situations with the patients that they will come across during this situation.
Joe, you have some thoughts, I'm sure.
Oh, I do. I think one of the things that's always impressed me about disaster medicine is the factor that or the impact that time has on disaster scenes, disaster medicine in particular, is really powerful. A lot of the things that we do from an emergency medicine and EMS standpoint on a day-to-day basis are virtually impossible in a disaster situation. And the real difference is just the time it takes to get things done. A lot of that's related to logistics. A lot of that's related to lack of resources, et cetera. But it's really a profound impact on every single aspect of our day-to-day professional lives and how that changes what we have to do and how we do it in a disaster situation. So, you know, I think simple stuff that folks take care of on a daily basis, medically, like an open fracture, as bad as that is, becomes a very, very different animal when you compound that with 48 hours of delay in getting to some sort of significant care for that, and the impact that has on the patient, the frustration that has on the provider, and the different ways of thinking that are required as you encounter one of those patients in a disaster situation, and what you're going to do with them. And, you know, oftentimes put them in the back of the truck and take them to the closest ED isn't really a practical opportunity. It's closest ED is 300 miles away. And, the idea that that's not really going to be a viable response suddenly puts you in a position that makes for a really great challenge.
Boy, I couldn't agree more on that. And I think that's really an important thing to touch on and we could do many episodes on how medicine is different in the austere environment. You don't have all the resources that you're used to having. We could do something like the DMAT that I work with might, if the hospital is functioning after a disaster, they might set up a tent outside and do triage from there to keep the folks that don't need to be in the ER out of the ER. It's just such a huge subject, and you're right. And this is what is hard to explain, is that people get used to pick up the phone and dial 911, and someone will be there immediately. And if they need to go to an ER, that ER will always be there and always be staffed. And Jim mentioned this, I think, on the last show, that I know out here in California, they say it'll be a good 72 hours, and I think that's conservative, that you're going to be on your own, because the resources that you expect to see are going to have their own issues. They're going to have apparatus breakdowns. They're going to have personnel injuries. They're going to have stations they can't get out of. The roads are going to be closed down in some cases. And again, this is just a huge subject that we can break down into a number of different things. But I also have to say, Jim, your point about the psychological aspects of this is a huge thing for me. I've been doing critical incident stress management with firefighters and ambulance folks since the beginning of time, practically. And I know that when you walk away from having worked in one of these disasters, it does change you. Not necessarily bad for the bad, but you do. And Joe, you mentioned this, that you walk away feeling you've done something really special for people, because these just aren't your everyday people with medical problems. These are people who might just tell you that their family washed away in a flood and they had no idea where to find these people or if they'd see them again. This is really a hard thing to deal with. What are your thoughts on that, Joe?
Well, I agree completely. You know, obviously, mental health and how we take care of folks with mental issues now is a topic of a lot of discussion related to, unfortunately, what seems to be now an act of violence of some sort that occurs way too frequently. But certainly, imagine how that might go in a situation where the access to any mental health is 100-fold more difficult than it is now, and really makes for great challenges as well as concerns over the providers themselves. You know, I can think of a particularly interesting kind of stress that's related to spending many, many hours digging into a collapsed structure, as happened in Haiti a lot, where you finally manage to make access to a space and get to a patient and who's been there for 2 or 3 days. And then to have an aftershock occur and have to pull out of that situation and break that contact with the patient and not know if you're going to be able to get back in there because the building may not be in the same state it was in before the aftershock, and you yourself may not be in any shape to be back in there. So there are tremendous stresses that occur there on a psychological level, not only for patients that we often think of, but I think we often lose perspective of our own psychological stress that occurs when we've spent hours working toward the goal of getting to a patient, getting them out of there, and then just before that goal is completed, you have to pull away from that, not knowing if you're going to be able to finish that task or not.
I think many of us, when we go to these disasters, and when the listeners, when they experience that their first one, the thought occurs that you know, I've been doing this X and so amount of years, I'll be able to handle things like this. But that really does something to your psyche when you have to leave a patient or when you're overwhelmed. And believe me, no matter how many patients you've seen in your entire career, may it be 1 year or may it be 30 years, the environment of a disaster really comes in to play, not only your patient load, but the environment that you're in, it becomes in many cases very surreal. So this could be a whole different series on disaster medicine that we can do. But because first of all, you have in disasters, you have to deal with the mentally ill. Right. You have those people that stay behind when they're told to get out, those things like that. Then you have the responders that are left there to take care of the situations. They're not really equipped. You know, that's something that we don't in paramedic school. Anyway, we don't really go into psychology very much. And so we're expected to be not only caretaker, but be counselor. And that is that really weighs on you as a provider as well. So. Those are just a few of my comments. There's a whole show we can do on mental health with disaster.
Oh, absolutely. And I would certainly like to do that show because I think that's really important. I'm going to throw a question at Jamie too. I found in my experience that how we are trained as EMS or hospital people has a bearing on how we function in disaster. And I was really surprised after my team came back from Katrina and the idea that you sometimes have to leave people behind that you know are going to have a negative outcome, especially nurses that are providing that level of care. We as paramedics, we basically understand that not everyone will survive and that sometimes we have to leave people in the field, and we've done the best that we can. But I think nurses are trained differently, that they usually always have some level of closure with the patient. They go to the morgue, they go upstairs to the ICU, they go home. And I found that our nurses really took a hit more so than even our medics. What do you think, Jamie?
I think that's probably very true. I mean, I have the benefit of being both a nurse and a paramedic. And so I was a paramedic first, and I brought that kind of outlook to my nursing care. But I think you're right. I think a lot of nurses don't understand. We're quite shocked when I said that, you know, before I got into nursing, I had a whole career's worth of patients that I, you know, saw for an hour and never knew what happened to them. Never knew whether they had a positive or a negative outcome based upon the care I gave them. And I think that that's something that, you know, again, we can come back around and talk about that, that whole different type of medicine. The EMS is a different type of medicine, but disaster medicine is a different type of emergency medicine in that austere environment. And I think that preparing people adequately is important. And it's one of the reasons we have Joe and Jim, you know, you guys as partners here with, and Paragon partnering with us to put this show out there, is because that preparation and that training and that education is so vital to creating an effective response force. And that's one of the things I think Paragon does such a great job of.
Well, thanks, Jamie. I appreciate that. You know, Jim and I have had a lot of experience with many different kinds of disasters. And, you know, quite honestly, as far as I'm concerned, we've been very blessed to be involved in many of that those type disasters. And, you know, part of what we try to do from our educational side is turn that into an educational experience that is what we have experienced, and allow the participants to sort of immerse themselves in that environment and really appreciate how very different it is, and try to get past some of those first shock type responses of, you know, just having a sense of sort of what the time flow is going to be like, and that the hurry up and wait is pretty much how it's going to be. That's it, it just works that way. Basically is really nice to allow you to refocus on. So let me just concentrate on stuff I can do, as opposed to standing here fussing or worrying or wondering about stuff I don't have any control over anyway. And, you know, I think a lot of what impacts responders in disasters from their effectiveness is they get caught up in the wondering, why is it taking so long for X and so to happen, and why can't I get what I'm asking for, and the situation I'm currently involved in is terrible, but it's hard to, when you're immersed in that, it's hard to appreciate, it's hard to have a sense of perspective, I guess is what I'm trying to say, that, you know, something there, this is a collapsed building from an earthquake, but guess what? There's 100,000 more of those within miles of me, and my situation isn't probably any worse than any of the rest that any of these other folks are having to deal with as well. And when you kind of can put all that stuff in perspective, you know, I think you then can refocus your attention to say, you know, something, this is probably as good as it's going to get for a while. And as Sam mentioned last week, you know, you're going to be on your own for a while, and you might as well just accept that and move with it. You can bitch about it all day, but it's not going to fix anything. So let's just get on with it.
Can we say that?
We just did.
Okay.
It's a reality.
I mean, it is a reality. And I think that that's an important aspect of it. And it's one of the things you guys bring to the table is giving people that realistic outlook ahead of time, so that the responders don't come in and get shell-shocked along with the people on the scene that are shell-shocked.
Yeah, that's kind of one thing. I'll jump in here real quick. That's one thing that we really try to focus on, the shell shock. You know, these low frequency, high risk skills, these procedures that we're expected to do, need to be second nature in that environment, because sometimes you will feel overwhelmed, but it just needs to be automatic. I know that sounds kind of strange, but and so it's just like it just rote memory. And so what we do in our classes, and we have different models of experiences that we can give it, but one thing that we do in the cadaver lab portion of it, like we're going to have it at EMS today, or we had at EMS today, we focus on those high risk, low frequency procedures like intubation, but we also And so the student gets all kinds of different types of intubation, nasal intubation, intubation with a traditional laryngoscope, different types of video laryngoscopes that are out on the market. So we actually try to use new products. We focus on skills and procedures that are basic to us so we can perfect those in the lab. But we also let the students feel what it's like to use a soft tourniquet or a cat tourniquet on human tissue, right? Instead of plastic. We get to practice that in our labs at school when you're in EMT school or continuing education or competency, stuff like that. But it's very rarely that you get to use it on human tissue over and over and over again until you become comfortable with it. So you may be compliant in a skill or a procedure that you get checked off on it, but not so much competent. And so that's what these labs bring, 8 hours or however long the class is for them. But the student gets, repetition in this.
Well, one of the things I want to see, as we get back into our topic is that I want to look at the alphabet soup of disaster response, because you three are experienced disaster responders. I'm kind of the outsider here learning alongside with the audience, and hopefully that'll help me bring the right kind of questions in to ask you. But in the course of this episode and last week's episode, I have heard acronyms for all kinds of things, and I don't have any idea what you guys are talking about. So, and I know that at the federal level, it's even worse when you talk about different types of
preparedness. We got to watch it, guys.
So, well, no, I think I don't think you have to watch it. I think we need to we'll just have to do an episode where we define all the acronyms and maybe know where they came from. And what is a pod? What is a, all these things that are out there for preparedness and response.
True.
So we know what we're talking about. It's just making me laugh as I was thinking about that last week. And again, this week is, it's a future topic that I want to see in a future episode. I want to see something about what kind of acronyms are out there. The other thing I want to point out is that one of the things that we hope to bring to this show that's going to make it really unique is we talk about learning and experience and education. We're going to bring you some of the information directly from responses, because somebody in the rest of this team here between Joe and Jim and Sam are likely to be deployed for some of these major responses. And if they aren't, they know somebody who is. And we're going to be bringing you some viewpoints from the ground so that you can learn alongside what we're learning. And I think that's going to be exciting as we move forward. As these events go on and we watch and hear about them in the news, what we really want to know about is what the responders are doing and their experiences. And we're hoping, Sam and I and Joe and Jim, to bring that firsthand experience to you, just in the same way that Paragon does this in their educational segments that they put on, but try to do some of that here in a small way here on the podcast.
Well, that's right, Jamie. That's actually a really exciting part. By the way, we will start working on the APC, the acronym podcast, right away. I think you're right. I think one of the things we hope to do is to incorporate as much real-time, real-world stuff into this podcast as we can. And do that by reporting directly from the scene of a disaster that we happen to be deployed on, or at least providing sort of an audio diary of what's going on there and the issues that are coming up, and using those as fodder for future podcasts and opportunities for our listeners to join in and make suggestions. And to some extent, this podcast, we hope, will become the focal point of the giant peripheral brain that's out there of disaster responders and thinking of better ways to do things, and their insights and input on how for all of us to do a better job.
I don't know, an acronym podcast, that sounds like a snorer to me. But, you know, it does make the point, Jamie, since you brought it up, that, you know, this isn't my favorite tagline is this isn't everyday medicine. It just shows that there is a huge difference between even all of us that understand EMS acronyms. When you get over to the disaster side, it's altogether more complicated.
Yeah. Jim, you have something to jump in with before we close out today's episode?
Yeah, it just kind of goes along with what Sam says. And it's something that when we come back from these disasters, of course, it's a long trip sometimes, either by plane or by bus or by whatever it is. And sometimes we get in the first response community, we get wrapped up in the disaster itself. With the rescue guys, you know, they're about breaking things and getting the situation under control. But something that really just occurred to me on one of the deployments that we were coming back from is, you know, at the end of the day, at every disaster, it's about the patient, and that's all we're there for. Things can be rebuilt, things can be put back to, you know, somewhat normal, but the reason we are there at disasters is because of people, and people need care, may it be psychologically or physically, and it may be long term, but at the end of every disaster, there's a patient.
Well said.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Well said. Well, I think that brings us to the close of our second episode here at the Disaster Podcast. And, you know, on behalf of Joe and Jim and Sam and myself, we want to thank all of you for being here. You know, as we close out, Jim or Joe, do you guys want to jump in and tell us where we can find more about you guys and more about Paragon?
Yeah, you can find us at our website is paragonmedicalgroup.com. Joe, we also have a Facebook page. Can you tell us about that?
You bet. We are on Facebook, also at Paragon Medical Group, and our Twitter is Paragon Med EDU.
Great. And Sam, where can folks find you?
I'm writing that down. EDU. Okay. I'm on the usual places. Facebook, of course. I'd love to have some new friends there. Sam Bradley, SamBradley11 at Twitter. And if we haven't mentioned it, our new webpage where we love to get comments and suggestions from you guys, disasterpodcast.com.
Yep, then make sure you head over and check that out. And we'll have about 3 or 4 episodes up there on the podcast site, and then we're going to go ahead and release this to the iTunes pages as well. So these initial episodes will be for the select few that are following us from the very beginning, and we do appreciate you very much, and we want you to become an integral part of this show. And that means you need to leave comments. You need to let us know what you liked about the show and what you want to hear more of. Because that's what we're all about, is bringing this educational experience about disaster preparedness and response to you so that you can learn more about it. So please contribute. I'm Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic. Of course, you can find me and my show over at the Medic Cast and MedicCast.com. And of course, Pod Medic just about everywhere on social media sites. So you can find me there. That's it for me and Sam and Joe and Jim. Sam, you want to take us out and leave us with our closing?
Well, one thought I had as a final closing thought was something Jim said that could be almost another tagline, because it's all about the patient. And regardless what kind of medicine you do, it's all about patient care. But one thing I want to leave you with is that disaster medicine is not your everyday medicine.